These activists are rallying for human rights and civil liberties. Amid the crowd is Pulitzer Prize-winning reporter Chris Hedges.
If we don't stand up now, there will come a day when it will not be possible to stand up anymore.
The American journalist, author, and war correspondent says democracy in America is a useful fiction. During this interview with RT, he explains why.
The Supreme Court made a ruling that essentially lifted any kind of regulations on corporate campaign donations. You wrote an article saying that that move exposes the myth of democracy, and the system that we have in place here in the U.S. is inverted totalitarianism. Can you elaborate on that?
Well, first of all, the idea that the Supreme Court ruling fundamentally changed the structure of American government is incorrect. It streamlined the process by which corporations are able to use influence peddling in the form of direct campaign contributions. But it doesn't alter the structure. The financial services industry, for example, has spent $5 billion over the last decade on campaigns, what we call political action committees or PACs, negative advertising, lobbying efforts, and there are 35,000 corporate lobbyists registered in Washington who manipulate the legislative process to such an extent that they actually write the legislation and they get pliable elected officials or legislators in Congress to pass it. The term inverted totalitarianism is a way to describe a system that is totalitarian at its core, but is not a classical form of totalitarianism. It doesn't revolve around a demagogue or a charismatic leader, but finds its expression in the anonymity of the corporate state. In inverted totalitarianism, you don't have a revolutionary party, like, for instance, the Bolsheviks, who rise up against a decaying system and replace it. You have a powerful entity, in this case corporate, that purports to pay fealty to electoral politics, to the Constitution, to traditional freedoms, to the iconography and language of American patriotism, yet has so corrupted the levers of power as to make that democracy inoperable. In classical totalitarian regimes, whether it was Soviet communism or Nazi fascism, politics always trumped economics. That's how you ended up with the famine in the Ukraine, in the Soviet Union. In inverted totalitarianism, economics always trumps political decisions. And with that comes a different form of ruthlessness. Now, one should also make it very clear that the peculiar quality of American corporatism is intimately linked to the defense industry. 60% now of discretionary spending, federal discretionary spending, goes to the defense-related industry. And that permanent war economy, coupled with the corporate state, is destroying the heart of America, quite literally.
How do you think everything could turn to the worst now that the rules of the political game have changed?
Well, what changes is that corporations can now make direct contributions in a way that they had to. I mean, for instance, firms like Goldman Sachs had to follow a process called bundling, which meant that there were limits on what an individual could contribute. But they would go around and give a long list of employees, and it would turn out to be a $100,000 contribution. I mean, this was just this makes it easier to influence or to get the money directly to political candidates who will do corporate bidding.
The motion
but
to reconsider
false to suggest that there were any kind of firewalls before.
Thank you
this
very
was
much,
something
that
wasn't happening
to the floor.
Before. If
we
you look at the first bailout plan, the $700 billion that was proposed for Wall Street, constituent calls coming into congressional offices were 100 to 1 against that plan, and yet it passed anyway. Why did it pass? Because, of course, the corporations wanted it passed. You can look at our health care bill, which is, in essence, going to force American citizens to buy their very defective product. Inefficient, they will have the capacity to raise co-payments and premiums. The telecommunications companies that pushed through the FISA Reform Act. I mean, bill after bill after bill furthers corporate fraud and disempowers the citizenry. And what we have been undergoing, in essence, since the Reagan administration, is a kind of coup d'etat in slow motion.
Americans watching this interview right now and hearing what you're saying, what can they do to fight what you call this inverted totalitarianism?
We have to opt out of the mainstream to the extent we have to break the back of the consumer economy. 70% of our economy is driven by consumption.
Cripple the money flow, not spend money?
Yeah, I mean, to the extent that we can build a popular movement that counters the corporate rape of the country that is furthered by both the Democrats and the Republicans, the better off we'll be. Many people are disillusioned with Barack Obama, and quite rightly so. But whether that means they will take the active step to step outside the system and defy it is an unknown.
You mentioned defense and military spending in your previous answer, and President Obama is seeking a record $708 billion in defense spending. Does this shift America's foreign policy in terms of the wars?
Well, we've had a steady imperial expansion, especially in the Middle East, since the first Gulf War. And that's what imperial powers do. They expand until they collapse. It's not a new story. You can go back and read the fall of ancient Rome, the Austro-Hungarian Empire. That's what empires do. And they destroy themselves from the inside out. And that's what's happening. In fact, defense-related spending is about when you count nuclear spending and veterans. It's about $1 trillion a year. And the simple fact is we can't afford it. We are borrowing to maintain an empire and a lifestyle that we can no longer pay for. And at some point, if that doesn't stop, and there's no sign that it will stop, we face the specter of collapse. As Lenin understood, the best way to destroy a bourgeois democratic state is to debauch its currency. I've lived in Yugoslavia and Nicaragua at times of hyperinflation, and I have seen what that does to established power. It turns the moral order upside down, and it makes functioning authority illegitimate. And when you look at states that collapse economically, Yugoslavia again being a good example, the wars in Yugoslavia were not caused by ancient ethnic hatreds. They were caused by the financial meltdown of Yugoslavia, which vomited up Slobodan Milosevic and Radovan Karadzic and Franjo Tuđman in the same way that the collapse in Tsarist Russia vomited up Lenin and the Bolsheviks, or the collapse of Weimar Germany gave us Hitler and the National Socialists. These kinds of figures lurk within any society. And because the left in the United States is bankrupt, because it has allied itself with corporate forces, in essence a Democratic Party that has plunged the working class in this country into tremendous poverty, the backlash will be a right-wing backlash. We're already seeing it.
President Barack Obama is not a stupid man. I'm sure he understands history the way many other people do. Why would he beef up defense spending and escalate troops and increase these wars that America is waging if he understands the significance of the economic recession that's taking place here? Why would he do such a thing?
Because he's weak. Obama is a brand. He functions as a brand. In the same way that advertisers like Calvin Klein or Benetton a few years ago brought in people of color, HIV-positive models, to give their products kind of risque style and even progressive politics. That's, in essence, what Obama has been for the corporate state. And it worked quite effectively until a year later people realized that the old engines of corporate power remained virtually untouched. And the suffering that was being visited upon citizens was continuing to accelerate. That's what a brand does. You confuse a brand with an experience. You confuse how you are made to feel with knowledge. You confuse propaganda with ideology. And it's not accidental that Advertising Age gave the Obama campaign the marketing award of the year, beating out Nike and Zappos and Apple. You know, take it from the professionals.
You and I met last month when I was covering a vigil for Sayyid Fahad Hashmi. You were speaking there. For anyone who doesn't know, he's a 29-year-old Muslim American activist who's been held in solitary confinement for 2.5 years in a federal prison in Manhattan, awaiting trial. U.S. officials say that he contributed to or supported al-Qaeda. You wrote an article about this saying that one day we will all be terrorists.
Well, because in the Hashmi case is particularly disturbing. First of all, he's an American citizen who's denied habeas corpus and basic constitutional rights, which as a precedent is terrifying. But secondly, what's particularly disturbing about the Hashmi case is that even the government doesn't charge that he was involved with terrorism or that he was planning an act of terrorism. He's going to be prosecuted for what he believes. The prosecution is intending to bring in tape recordings of speeches that he gave as a student activist at Brooklyn College. Now, he's a radical Muslim, and he's denounced the United States in virulent terms. But he has not committed an act of terrorism, nor is there any indication, even on the part, even the government doesn't charge him with planning an act of terrorism. And if we are allowed to strip people of their constitutional rights, hold them in Guantanamo-like conditions within the United States, within New York City, and prosecute them for what they believe, then we have set a precedent that permits the state to effectively banish those who practice the democratic right of dissent.
Thank you very much for your time.
Thank you.